What is going on, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and today I am talking to Rachel. So Rachel is somebody I ran across on Instagram after Wynn's episode. She gave me a follow, and what stuck out about Rachel is that she's from Australia, and she's also an alt-country music singer and songwriter. And so I was intrigued, to say the least. And so I started checking her out a little bit, and on her website bio, it talked about growing up in a family country band and touring around the country, like making a living doing that sort of thing. And I was like, I have got to get Rachel on this show. She is going to be incredible. And I'm just going to tell you right now, it did not disappoint. It was even more epic than I had imagined. So you are in for such a treat. Like I said, Rachel has this really interesting family background, but I love the dynamics of her parents and how they sort of raise their kids. And we talk through some of that. And then you can see just in significant ways the way that her upbringing and the way that her parents imbibed faith into her plays out in her everyday life now. It is just so clear. It is so apparent. She's also got an incredible accent, and she has an awesome voice, and I love talking to her. She's just such a fun person, but she's also a person of real depth. And you can tell that in this interview. There's depth there. There's wisdom. I think you're really going to get a lot out of what she has to say today. She has some great thoughts, and just talking about music, and we talk about essential oils. We talk about parenting. We get into all the things. So you are going to love it. Plus, I'm legit international now. So, you know, that's pretty sweet. I'm pretty pumped about that. Australia. You know, 17-hour time difference was not easy to work out an interview, but we got it done. So you're in for a treat. So make sure while you're thinking about it, go ahead and rate and review me on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. That just helps kind of get the word out. It helps people know that people are listening. If you want to, and you should, follow me on Instagram at Theology of Hustle. There is always something going on there. There's always such wisdom and insight and craziness going on my Instagram. So it's a good follow, I think. So check it out. It keeps you up to date with everything that's going on. And I hope you enjoy this interview with Rachel. Well, Rachel, I can't say thanks enough. This interview took some doing, but you stuck with me, and I really appreciate it. So,
not a problem. Hey, I think we're pretty fancy, right? Like, you're in America, I'm in Australia, Yeah. And I think that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's weird that you're 17 hours ahead of me. It's like you're living in the future, and I'm just like trying to catch up or something, you know?
Bizarre. That's why Australians are so relaxed, because we already know what's going to happen, right? So you guys are so stressed and frantic over there, and we're like, guys, Yes. Just relax. We know we've been there. It's easy.
That's a good call. Makes a lot more sense now. All right, well, let's jump off here with just you having you introduce yourself to everybody.
Yeah, so my name is Rachel Whitchurch. First and foremost, I am a Christian. I'm also a wife, a mother, a musician, an essential oil lady. I love the arts. I love creativity. I love business. And so I grew up in kind of an eccentric family. My mum and dad had four kids by the time they were 24. And so when I was around 8 years old, they decided that they wanted to start a traveling country family band. So just like all of the cool things in one, you know? So they're like, how can we make our kids have the thickest skin possible? I know, let's put them in a traveling country band. And so we grew up in a really like kind of different upbringing than most people. My parents bought an old green Millard caravan, and I don't know if you guys have like a Toyota, that brand. We have Toyota Troop Carrier. It's a dapper car, like a big sort of truck sort of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we traveled around Australia, and so we jumped into our car and our caravan, and we lived on the road. And so we would do gigs at pubs and clubs and hotels from Thursday to Sunday every week, and then we would do our schooling on Monday to Wednesday/Thursday day, and then we would start it all over again. And we would just be traveling through Australia. We would, my dad would book the gigs, my mum would do the schooling and all the other jobs that come with looking after four kids. And yeah, and so we just kind of, you know, like they did ask us if we wanted to be a part of it. I was eight, so like kind of, you know, I said yes, not really knowing what I was saying yes to. Right. And then, yes, we did that for a bunch of years, probably I'd say 5 to 10 years on and off. And the first time we did it for a full year. And then we loved it so much, we just went back for more. And so when I was around, I don't know, must have been 18, we decided to move to a little town called Parkes, which is in kind of like the – it's 5 hours basically from Sydney. So I'm trying to think of how to explain it to you guys over there in the States. But so five hours inland. Yeah. And so it's a cool little town. It actually has one of the biggest Elvis festivals in the world in Parkes, which is a little Elvis festival. But also Elvis, yeah. So every year they have like, you know, tens of thousands of people descend upon the town to come and celebrate Elvis. So great. Wow. Why not? Who doesn't like Elvis? And and another cool thing about it is that it has like a massive telescope, like a dish there, and there was actually a movie made about it. And so the moon landing was actually broadcast from this dish in Parkes in this little town in Australia. So that's another interesting little tidbit for you. I know. So that's American cool. one, or I think it was actually, it might have been the British telescope. I can't remember which one it was, but it failed. And so they had to ask the casual Australians if we'd help you guys out.
Can we borrow your satellite? Yeah, no big deal or whatever.
We were like, yeah, why not? Yeah. Right. So anyway, it's a cool little town. And so we moved there, relocated there when I was 18 and kind of settled down a little bit. I met my husband there. We got married when we were around 21, 22. And then a year later, we moved to Sydney. And we've been here around 8 years now. We have two kids. We have a little boy, Graham, and a little girl, Magnolia. And we like it here. We like living in Sydney, and it's good.
That is awesome. Your story, that's when I read your bio on your website, I was like, I have got to talk to this woman, because your growing up just boggles my mind. I have got to, can we delve into that
sure.
a little bit more? Okay. I have so many questions. So like, you lived on the road growing up. I mean, that's just sort of traveling around and playing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And so, and the crazy thing is we didn't know how to play instruments when my parents came up with this idea. So they were like, let's start a family band, and no one could play anything. So yeah. So
are you for real?
So we all just like learned together. Like my mum took up the bass at 30, you know? So it was wild. What?
So it wasn't like they were already musicians?
No, my dad could play a little bit of acoustic guitar, but we all just started together. So like we were pretty bad at the beginning, hey?
Wow. That is amazing. Yeah. Okay. So where were you at in the line of children? Like what place are you in the family?
Yeah. So I'm classic eldest child.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so.
So at eight, you were the oldest.
Yes.
Going on the road with your family to start a family band.
That's right. Yes. And so I had the eldest, I like, you know, me and my brother, who were only a year and a bit apart, we had like a lot of more responsibility because we were older. But I think it was, you know, we were young, but my parents kind of raised us in a way in our family unit where, like, of course they were the parents, but they were also very open and honest with us about decisions they were making, or if we were struggling financially, or hard things, you know, like when our grandfathers died, things like that. They were just, they always included us in decisions. And so I think, you know, we started the band when I was eight. I think we actually went on the road the first time when I was 12. But I think like it didn't seem abnormal to us that they were like, hey, would you guys like to stop going to school for a year and travel around Australia and play music? And we were like, okay, like we'll have a think about it. We'll get back to you. And so it didn't seem odd to us. Although now when I'm talking about it, I'm like, yeah, kind of weird, guys.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely unique. We'll go with that. So what did you end up learning how to play then?
So my first instrument when I was a kid, I started playing piano when I was five, and I played piano for about 5 years. But when we started playing in the band, obviously liking piano around with you is not an easy thing to do. And so I started learning the mandolin. And so I played the mandolin initially, and then that became the acoustic guitar as I kind of got bigger and my fingers were bigger. And then I also learned the banjo. And sometimes we got a keyboard, and I would sometimes play keyboard as well. But we all had different instruments. You know, my brother was on the drums. My little sister, Faith, she had harmonicas and violin. You know, my mum was on the bass. My dad was on electric and rhythm guitar. So we all had our little jobs that we had to do.
Yeah. That is so, gosh. Okay. So what was it like? I want to start with this. What was it like living on the road with your parents and three siblings?
Look, it's so hard to talk about it now as an adult because I didn't know anything really different. And so, you know, it was amazing. Like, yeah, that was true. What we knew. We all, you know, we got to see all over Australia, all over the world. We traveled a lot. We were a very tight-knit family. I think my mum had a really great way of schooling us as well. So my parents are really big on, of course, like education, but on grit and on life lessons and you know, yeah, just practicalities, I think, that sometimes seem to be missing in some elements of schooling these days. And so, you know, often my mum would structure our schooling depending on where we were. You know, if we were in a particular town, we would, you know, do the history of that town, and we would learn about what, you know, how that town formed or what the important, you know, things were for that town. You know, I worked a lot with my dad on the business side of our band. And so I remember one of the things that I was given a project by my dad once, and I think I was, must have been 13 or 14, and he said, "What I want you to do is we need new guitars and we can't afford new guitars, so I want you to get us an endorsement with a guitar company, and my preference is Fender, so if you can start with Fender, that would be great." And so
just little Fender, right?
Just Fender. Start at the top, right. Work your way down. And so Fender, yeah. And so I was like 14 and it seemed wild, but I didn't know any different. And my mum and dad told me I could do it. And so I assumed that I could do it. And so, you know, I put together a little presentation, like a little video. I wrote them handwritten letters, sent them off to them. And then every week after week, I'd call them. "Hi, it's Rachel calling. I'm just calling about my letter. Did you get it?" Anyway, this went on for, I'm like talking months and months of me calling and asking for the CEO of Fender in Australia every week. Wow. Until they gave us an endorsement, and I still have it today. And so just like,
are you for real?
I know, it's wild. When I tell people, they're like, "Are you being serious? You got that when you were 14? I'm like, yeah. And so at the time though, like, my parents just told me, like, this is your job. This is how you can help support the family business. And they never spoke to me in a way like, "Okay, Rach, like, we've got this job for you. You probably won't be able to do it, but just see how you go." They always spoke to me in a way where they empowered me, and my age never came into it. You know, they never said to me, "Oh, you're young," or you might not be able to. They always said to me, "You can do this. Just be confident and go ahead, and it will be difficult and you might get some no's, but just keep going to get the job done." And so I genuinely believed that I could do it, which is probably, I mean, look, I'm not sure if they just gave it to me because they wanted me to stop calling their office. I'm not really sure. But they gave it to me in the end. And so that, and we actually have a really, we have a really good relationship with Fender Australia now. And, you know, those guys help us out all the time, and still very grateful to be in partnership with them. So it's kind of a, like, you know, that's an example, I guess, of how my parents have chose to educate us, which I think, you know, even, you know, the title of your show, Theology of Hustle, I'm like, talk about hustle, right? Like, 14-year-old trying to get like a guitar endorsement. So
no doubt. Yeah. There was no doubt in my mind when I saw your upbringing and what you do now that you know how to hustle. So
thanks, mom and dad.
Because it's just that life, right? I mean, that's the lifestyle, and that's how you just get stuff done, right?
It's true.
So what about performance though? Was performing like in front of people? I guess now it's like so natural to you, I would assume, right?
Yeah, it is, like, it's definitely a different thing performing with your family versus performing solo, or I perform with my husband now. Sure. But I guess we just kind of grew up doing it. Like, you know, we didn't really, like I said, once again, it's one of those things where I try and think about it. I'm like, we didn't really know any different. And so we all sort of learned together. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that it is missing a lot from performers. I mean, don't get me wrong, not that I'm some sort of expert on the matter, but I think that the thing that I know about myself is that I'm real and I'm authentic when I'm on stage. And sometimes when I go to watch shows now, you can kind of pick the people who have a history of performing and the ones who have been thrust into the spotlight suddenly, and they've maybe not done the hard yards. They've never played a show to a pub where there's three people there, and they just are trying so hard to hold those three people there, you know? And so I think it's definitely, you can notice when someone has, you know, done the hard miles and knows how to engage an audience and knows what sorts of things to talk about on stage, versus someone who just, I don't know, like has maybe won a singing competition or, you know, has had a hit single and rose to fame quite quickly. And so I think, yeah, performing was definitely something that we learned over the years. And it's funny, we did always know, like I even remember my dad, you know, saying things to us like, when you're on stage, you know, people are looking up to you. And so you need to make sure that you present yourself in a way that that people can, you know, aspire like to be like you. And so if you behave badly in your personal life, then that reflects on you as a performer. And so all these ideas that, you know, you just get ingrained into you as a child. And then as an adult, you know, it's still, I think, still resonates, you know, like who you are on stage. I guess it is different, but it's kind of not as well. You know, you're the same person whether you're on stage, whether you're off stage. And so just be real, you know, and make sure your private life matches up to the responsibility you've been given by being in the public eye.
That's cool. I like that a lot. So did you grow up, was your family all Christian and you just sort of grew up in that? Like,
We used to live in a little town called Broken Hill before we started traveling. And so my grandfather on my dad's side, he was a preacher at a church in Broken Hill where we lived. And so we grew up in this family church and went there for many years. And so I guess you could say I grew up, you know, in a Christian family. My parents are both one of five. And so my mum's parents also attended that church as well, but they're both also kind of not yet. Well, my mum's a youngest child. My dad's a second youngest child. So I often like joke because I'm like, I'm an eldest child. My parents are youngest children. I'm like, oh man, they annoy me, those two with their, you know, their young child attitudes. Better understand what it's like to be an eldest child.
That is true. I'm the oldest of five. So I'm right there with you. So
you got to listen. Yeah, you know, the rules are important, you know,
yes. Like, yes, people don't understand.
They don't. But it's funny because we also, like, I'm getting on tangent, but my husband often laughs as well because he's like, yeah, he's like, you are the oldest child, but like of a really weird family. So you're kind of like not, like you're like a hippie oldest child. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll take that. So, my grandfather was a minister, grew up going to church. My parents had me quite young. So my mum got pregnant with me when she was 17 and had me when she was 18. And so my parents, you know, were really young. It was like unexpected pregnancy, but like obviously had a great result because here I am. So they got married and had like, you know, a bunch of kids, had us all by the time they were 24 and 25. So very young, lots of kids. And so I think I did grow up in a Christian home. My parents 100% knew God, have always known God. And for me, grew up, you know, knowing who God was, knowing what Jesus had done for me. I got baptized when I was really little. I think I must have been like 6 or 7, and my grandfather actually baptized me before he passed away. So I have this beautiful picture sitting on my cupboard downstairs of him baptizing me. Yeah. And I remember knowing very clearly at the time, I remember sitting there and I said to my mum and dad that I wanted to get baptized. And my dad was like, okay, you just wanting to do it because other people are doing it? Because it was after I'd, you know, seen some people get baptized. And I said, no. And I explained to him very articulately why I wanted to get baptized. And so, you know, they went through, you know, all the different, you know, you prepare for baptism and things like that and chat with your pastor, and the pastor was my grandfather and my uncle. And so I did all of that. And so I definitely knew God from a young, young age. And then I feel like when I was around 18, yeah, it must have been 18, I mean, look, I never really have had a massively rebellious stage or anything like that, but I definitely remember going through I guess, a period where I just didn't really know what I was doing in my life. Like our band, we'd sort of finished playing music together. I felt a bit unsure about what I was supposed to be doing next. I was dating my husband, my now husband, didn't really like, you know, wasn't sure about that relationship and felt a bit uncertain. And so I went away on this trip, this mission trip. It was the first time I'd been overseas by myself. And I went to India to volunteer on this program. And it was I guess it was kind of like an orphanage type thing, but not exclusively an orphanage, but helping these kids in India who didn't have parents and were like, you know, living in these little villages, really remote. And so we were going there to, you know, do like medical days and provide them with resources, you know, open up this center where they could come for help, all those sorts of things. And so I went away on this trip. It was about 10 days, 2 weeks. And I just remember that being like a life-changing trip for me. I think it was because it was the first time, you know, I could clear my head. I got away from my life and I was, you know, away just experiencing, you know, the slums in India, like literally just people who were, you know, really struggling. And yet there were so many people there who knew Jesus. And so I got really challenged on that trip. I was reading my Bible every chance I got. And it was the first time I'd really done that, I guess, really had a real thirst for the word in that way. And I don't know, I just felt really challenged by the people there that I was meeting that were giving up the little that they had to further the name of Jesus. And I felt really convicted. And I just remember thinking to myself, I'm saying I'm a Christian, but my life is not matching up to these people here who are saying they're Christians. Like, you know, what I'm doing is kind of not really like they're giving more from the little they have than I'm giving from the lot that I have. And I'm talking financially, but I'm not just talking financially exclusively. I'm talking about, you know, energy and time. And anyway, I met this little girl there. I remember we went to this kids program one day, and all the kids were lined up and they're about to have lunch or something. And they started praying, and they were praying, it's a Christian God, but they were praying in their language. And so I didn't understand what they were saying, but all the kids were kind of like shutting their eyes, just waiting for the meal. But there's this one little girl, and she just had her fingers, like her hands together in like the prayer symbol, but just like so, and had her eyes, just like her little eyes were just scrunched closed so tightly. And she would just really look like she was focusing on that prayer so much. And I don't know, something about that image, I took a picture of it at the time because I was just so moved by how deeply she was praying. And she was only like, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 or something. And after the prayer finished, I went to the guy I was on the trip with, like the head of the trip and his wife, and I said, is that little girl sponsored yet? Because they were doing sponsorship. And he said, oh no, she's just like coming, her mum is ill and her dad has passed away. And they told me her name was Priya. And so I actually started sponsoring Priya on that trip, and I've been sponsoring her since I was 18, and so now I'm 31. So, and I've gone back and visited her a bunch of times, and so that, wow. I think, yeah, so she's a sweet little girl and loves God, and I think that was just, for me, that was kind of a turning point in my Christian walk. Not to say I didn't know God. I did know God. I think it was a time when I felt more convicted, and it really spurred me on to the next level of growth that I needed in order to serve God. All my heart, all my soul.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I love that story. Because you do, I mean, throughout your life, there are those moments where it's just like, there's a next level, right? Like I, you know, we all get complacent and so that's cool. Mm. That's really cool. Thanks. I am struck by, the way that you're up, like your upbringing. It's very different. Obviously it's, you know, like your husband said, maybe a little hippie-ish family, but your parents seem very intentional about the lessons that they were like pouring into you at the same time, right? Like, were they always just sort of like, that's just kind of how they always were and are to some extent?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question. I've never been asked that before. I think my parents are like very intentional people. They're also a lot of fun. Like my dad is the dad that like, everyone wants him to be their dad. So when they meet him, they're like,
sure.
My gosh, is that your dad? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, kind of want to be friends with him more than you. Like, you're like a lot less fun than he is. So like definitely like fun people. But yeah, they are very intentional. I think one of the, I don't know if it's like a benefit to me per se as a child, but one of the things about my parents is because, you know, my mom's only 18 years older than me. You know, it's not, that's why I'm 31 and my dad's 51, you know, so they're like pretty young.
Right.
And when we were growing up, it wasn't that long ago that they were there at that stage in their life. I think it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a huge jump for them to remember that time of their life. And so I think that they actually took things really seriously. They saw the path that they were heading down before they kind of like turned their life around. And I think that they just wanted to do everything in their power to make us avoid that. And on top of that, they were super poor when we were kids. You know, they had not much money. My dad like really struggled to get work because he had a bit of a bad rep. And so, you know, that's why he ended up working for himself. And so I think like everything was really like one small decision where you're just like, oh, it doesn't really matter. It's a little thing. To my parents, I think they're always thinking of the bigger picture and thinking, no, this does matter because we know where this could lead and this attitude leads here or that, you know, behavior leads there. And so in some ways it was kind of annoying because like we could never, I remember when my dad, me and my sister went the other day, my dad's catchphrase, like that we're just like, man, we hated that when growing up. If we had a bad attitude about something, my dad would always be like, listen, I don't know where this bad attitude has come from, but you must be doing something wrong. I'd be like, oh my gosh, please stop. Dad, leave me alone. And so he just like always just like was searching like, and I guess in a way like trying to help us search our own hearts to keep us like, you know, doing the right thing or, I don't know, making good decisions. And I think in a way, when you're a kid, like your brain's like not fully formed, like you can't make good choices. And so I think it's a parent's job to protect you from yourself until you reach an age where you can make good decisions. And so I appreciate that they worked so hard on keeping all of us safe from the world. And I want to say it sounds so weird and like weird homeschooling kids, but like, you know, like we were in bars 4 nights a week, you know, we're not those weird homeschooling kids.
You know,
we were in the world. That's not what I'm saying. Right. They gave us, you know, we were very aware of, you know, they didn't hide things from us. We weren't these like people living in a wood cabin, like, you know, thinking that like the world didn't exist, but they were just very clear about what was expected of us and what was acceptable behavior and what was unacceptable behavior. And then they helped us to navigate that sometimes when we didn't want them to, you know, but that, hey, look, that's the job of a parent is to try and help your child make decisions. So yeah. So I think they were, in short, that's a long winded answer to say, I think they were intentional. And I think it's because they had seen where, you know, bad choices, bad decisions, bad thoughts can lead. And they wanted us to avoid the pain that they'd had to go through to get to where they were. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. That's interesting. Appreciate you delving down that road. That's good stuff. Okay, so now you are still a musician and you're in a solo sort of career, but you are a country musician. Is that true? Would you call yourself a country musician or?
Yeah. I mean, look, I usually say like alt country or Americana because I think not that I have any problem with country music. I hold that country music flag up high. I love country music, but I think that I probably err a bit more on the side of alternate country. Me and my husband love country music. We love like the classics, you know, like our son is literally named Graham after Graham Parsons. I don't know if you know Graham Parsons or not, but he's from an old band called The Birds. And yeah, he's a great old singer-songwriter. Let me tell you though, when people call him Graham, I'm like, it's Graham. He's not a middle-aged man. But we grew up listening to a lot of country music. My parents, you know, definitely loved country and, you know, like the classics, Johnny Cash, listen to Dylan, you know, all of those old-timey, like Jimmy Rogers. And now, you know, we just love country music. Buddy Miller, you know, Jason Isbell's a more recent guy that's like pretty cool. Yeah, but I think I just love country music. I love the storytelling aspect of it. People, my favorite thing is when people, I say, can you, like, you know, if they want to jam or whatever, I'm like, oh, can you play country? And they're like, oh, who can't play country? It's like three chords. And then you try and watch someone play country music and you're like, yeah, well, buddy, like, you know, there's more to it than just three chords, but good try.
Yeah, right. Right. That's good. That's good. I'm a Texan, right? But there's a connection to Texas for you, right? Do you mind telling that story?
We love Texas. So what happened was, look, before we had kids, and we were feeling a bit directionless. We'd been married nearly 5 years and we were just feeling a bit, I don't know, like just lost around what the next step was for us. After I played music in my family band, and then I stopped. I moved to Sydney. We moved to Sydney together, and I moved for a job in the music industry. And so I got a really great job at the top country music agency here in Sydney. So I was one of their head, or was the head booking agent there for a long time. And one of my first jobs when I came here. I love music. I love music industry. I love business. And so it was like a good fit. But my passion for music, for playing music, had definitely disintegrated over the years for whatever reason, just probably from 10 years of it being our source of income and you know, something that we had to do. And I think when you, it's really a difficult balance trying to mix playing music and writing songs because you love music and you love, you know, getting a message across in a song, whatever it may be, and then trying to do the business side of music with that, which most artists these days, especially when they're starting out, have to do that because there's not enough money in the world to pay everyone, right? And so you've just got to do it all yourself. And so I hadn't played music in years, and then a few different things had happened, and I'd been roped into playing music again at my church and leading worship there, and I'd been doing that, you know, for a bit. And then I said to my husband, I think maybe I want to do music again, but I'm not sure. And a few people had said a few things to me in different scenarios that have made me stop and think. And anyway, we were feeling a bit directionless, and so I said to him, why don't we just go on a trip to the States? I said, we love America. I love America. He'd never been. And I said, you need to come. Like, and I said, I need to find my passion for life again. And I feel like I've lost it. And I said, and nothing makes me find my passion like hanging out with some good old Americans. So, cause you guys just love life so hard. Do you know what I mean? Like, and you're also loud and like, I feel like you're my people. So in Australia, everyone's like, oh,
especially
wait,
Texans, yeah, right, for sure.
Yeah. So when I go to Texas, I feel like I don't stand out, which I love. You know, in Australia, everyone's like, you're so loud, you're so passionate, you're so opinionated. I go to Texas and they're like, oh, yeah, you're just like the same as us. So it's great. But anyway, I convinced my husband to go on this trip, and he's a bit apprehensive. And so we'd planned, I think it was a 4-week trip, and I planned the whole thing out, and he hadn't really put much effort into it just because he was like, well, I don't know what to expect. And we basically, I flew into LA, and I did a couple shows there with a friend of mine, and then I met my husband in Dallas. And so we flew in there, we met there, and the first thing we did when we got there is we actually went and saw some friends of ours play a gig there from Ben. I feel like they're kind of big where you guys are. They're called Need to Breathe. They're like a Christian rock band. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so in Australia. Yeah, right. So they're kind of not that big in Australia, but I'd met them through, you know, whatever. Huh. And so we went I messaged and said we're coming, and they said, come to our show. We're doing a show in Dallas, like the night we flew in. And so we went along to their show, and it was massive. It was huge. And I just remember standing in that crowd and watching them play and just being – and immediately I was just like – like I felt like I just like could breathe this like sigh of relief. I was just like, I found like it's here. Like, and so it wasn't like – it wasn't – Dallas, it wasn't Need to Breathe, it was the fact that I was watching this band, I was sitting there with my husband, and I don't know, something just came back to me around my love of music, and it was like I just kind of remembered this old Rachel, this Rachel of the past that I'd forgotten about, and it all just started coming flooding back to me. And then, you know, from there we went down to Austin, and you know, we drove around, and we didn't even do anything that magical. I mean, look, we did stay in a pretty amazing retro trailer in Austin. Like, we hired a retro trailer and stayed in that for a few days.
Of course.
And it was like, we tried to do all the redneck things we could possibly think of, you know? So, my husband always, like, my brother and my husband, like, we have this, like, saying where we're like, yeah, like, our skin is white, but our neck is red. So, and so we, went down to Austin, and, you know, went to Barton Springs there, and just did all these cool things down there, and went and saw some gigs. And anyway, I actually wrote a song about it, which I've never released or done anything really, but the hook line of the song I wrote, it says, and in Texas I remembered who I am. And that's the hook line of the song. And so that was the first place we visited on this 4-week journey through America. And we drove across the country. We went, we drove to Nashville. We spent a bunch of time there. We went to Americana Fest in Nashville. We drove down to the Carolinas and all through there. And it was just amazing. It was just a beautiful trip. And it just really kickstarted my husband and I. I don't know. Sometimes I think you just forget that God, I mean, not to get super spiritual about it, but sometimes I feel like you forget that God gives you desires in your hearts. And don't get me wrong, they're not always good and they're not always right, but sometimes he gives you desires of your heart. And then the thing that stops you from doing them is, I think, something like it's fear, or it's like, you know, this fear of failure, or this fear of, like, I don't even know what it is, of judgment, or worry around, you know, how you pay your bills or whatever it may be. And I think it's like once again, like super spiritual, but I think it's kind of like a trap from Satan, like to keep you from doing things that will make a difference in the world. I'm not saying that my music is going to make a difference in the world, by the way, like that's not at all what I'm saying, but I'm saying that me pursuing something that makes me the best version of me, makes me a much more beneficial person to society and to the people around me and to the people that I'm, you know, I'm helping or chatting with about God or whatever it may be. And so I think, yeah, I really felt like on that trip, I just remembered that it's a good thing to chase after and pursue the things that God has put in your heart in accordance with his will, of course. Yeah. I want to add that little disclaimer in there because I don't want people saying, well, you know, I just felt like I should leave my wife because that was like the right thing that I felt in my heart. No, that's wrong.
Right. No, but I think that's a great word. I really appreciate that because I really do feel like, and I agree with you, that's not an over-spiritualization at all. I mean, Satan wants us to not be pursuing the things that God has for us. I mean, you summed up the theology of hustle pretty perfectly, actually, just then, because it's those God-given things that God places on our hearts. Like, yes, do this. This is, you know, God's like telling you to go and enjoy the things that he's gifted you with. And just because it's not necessarily like, I don't know, being a pastor or something doesn't mean that there's not like value that it's adding to the world in significant ways. So, yeah, that's good. Good job. Yeah.
And there's nothing, I think, more encouraging. Thanks. Yeah. I think there's nothing more encouraging to people than seeing someone who is content in themselves, who's happy. You know, nothing makes me sadder than hearing people talk about how much they hate their jobs.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, we spend like most of our life working, people like are angry about that. And I'm like, I love what I do. Like, every morning I get up and I'm like, I wish my baby would go back to sleep quicker so I can get back in my office and start doing
right.
But don't all the mums out there are like, you know, shaking their fists at me. Don't get me wrong. I spend sufficient time with my children. I love them to bits. I think like you should love your work and you should love what you do. And I think that's an inspiring thing for people around you to see. People not chained to fear, I guess.
Yeah. Amen. Amen. Good. Yes. Good stuff. So let's talk just a little bit about the hustle then. So what's it like? I mean, I know you have the musician thing, you do the oils, which, you know, I do Young Living as well. I mean, I use them whenever I can.
Yes.
Talk about all that. What's that like being a mom and all the things?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I think this is the first time I've ever spoken to someone on any sort of platform about my essential oil business. I don't really talk about it very much. I don't use social media really to do business. It's just not how I do that business. And I work really hard at it. And it's probably my main source of income. But I love it. I love it so much. I think looking after our bodies and looking after children and using less chemicals, I think that's a really important thing. And I could talk about it all day, but I'm not going to because that's not all we hear about. But I do love it. And that was something that, once again, you know, I took a chance on that. I'd been using essential oils for around a year or so. And a friend of mine who actually helped me get started with the oils was kind of badgering me a little bit. We joke and I say bullying. I say, you're bullying me a little bit. but she was like, why don't you do this essential oil business? And I was like, no, I don't. I said, I've got too many things going on. I had a full-time job at that point and I just have time. I got pregnant, I think, maybe it was just before, I can't remember the timeline exactly. But I had a bunch of people just asking me about the oils all the time because I just use them all the time. And we don't use chemicals in our home anymore. And so I changed out everything in our life you know, and there were a few reasons for that. I had like an autoimmune disease and a few other things that I was trying to like fix up in my life. And so anyway, all that to say, I sort of naturally fell into accidentally doing like classes or helping people with oils. And then before I knew it, I'd sort of built this, like not a business, but I'd built a little bit of a business. And so I think it got to a point where first I was just, I think I was just paying like my phone bill every month with the money, and I was like, oh, it's kind of great. And then I think then I was paying like half my rent every week, and I was like, oh, it's like kind of a thing now. And anyway, I got to a point where I was like, it's kind of like people like these oils, like I'm amazed. I wasn't amazed, of course I love them, but it got to a point where I had my son, and he was 7 months old. I had to go back to full-time work. I was lucky enough that I was working for a charity, I was doing artist and celebrity management for a charity here in Australia. Mm-hmm. And so any artists or celebrities that wanted to partner with this charity, I would manage that relationship for them. So it was still kind of a cool job, right? And my whole team were based out of Melbourne, which is a different city. And so I was working from home 4 days a week. And so I did really long work days to make it a 5 day a week work week, but within 4 days. But I still had to put my kid in daycare, right? And so I kind of, don't get me wrong, I love daycare, and my son's still in daycare now for 3 days a week. But for me, I think everyone has a line of what they feel comfortable with. For me, my line is I don't feel comfortable putting him in more days a week than I see him. Sure. And so I'm comfortable with 3 days a week and me having him 4 days a week. So that's my line. But everyone has a different line. That was just mine. And so I just felt uncomfortable, and I didn't want to keep doing that, but I had no choice because we had bills to pay, right? And so I remember making a conscious decision at some point where I just said, I don't want to do this anymore, and I don't want to be away from my son this many days a week, and so I'm going to try this oil thing. And I'd already been doing it on and off, and I've said, I think I need to draw a line in the sand and just give it a red hot go and see what happens. And so I worked super hard, and it was really hard because, you know, I was working a full-time job, I was doing music, and then I was also doing oils on the side. And in my brain, I knew I wanted to have more kids, and so I said, by the time I have my next baby, whenever that may be, I don't want to go back to work after I have that baby. Sorry, I don't want to go back to full-time work after I have that baby. I want to work for myself by that point. And so I had my little girl, Magnolia, 6 months ago now. And so I finished work 2 months before I had her. And that was when I went on maternity leave, I actually quit my job so I couldn't return. Nice. I didn't say I'm taking maternity leave. I quit my job and drew a line in the sand, and I was making enough then that it was close to my full-time salary. And so I was able to just quit that job and have that oil income. And so for me, you know, look, people get weird about, I don't know, all sorts of things, but I guess the oils is one of them. For me, I love them, and I love what they've done for my family and what they've enabled me to do for my lifestyle and how I want to structure it. And they also have opened up heaps of opportunities as well to talk to people about God, which I find amazing. You know, it's funny how people's health and wellness go hand in hand with their spiritual wellness. And so I get so many opportunities to talk to people about Jesus and what he's done for them. And I just love that. I think it's like a real blessing on my life financially and from an eternal perspective as well, for people's like souls, which to be honest is kind of better than the financial perspective.
Truth.
And so, so I love that. So I've been doing that for, you know, I don't know, two years or so now, and it's really great. And so I also do music. And so I have a little EP out that I released a couple of years ago. I'm currently writing for my next record. And so that's one of the things I'm actively working on this year, is really pushing to get the material together. I would have liked to have had it out already, but I just got busy with baby times, and I also didn't want to put out a record that I wasn't 100% happy with. And so I had songs, but I didn't feel like they were the right ones. And so I'm kind of a little bit, kind of went back and was like, okay, I just want to start again. And so I'm writing the songs, and I have a few, but I just want to get the right ones. And so this, and it's funny, I just this last couple of weeks they've really started like kind of flooding out of me, which is like great, because I felt when you have to force them, it's never right. And so they've really started coming out the last few weeks, and I feel like it's starting to take shape, the direction I want this record to go in. And so I love that. So still doing, you know, the occasional gig here and there. We've got a massive country music cruise coming up at the end of the year. So Ben and I, in October, it's a 5-day cruise where people buy ticket to go on this 5-day cruise to these islands near Australia. They it's all country music artists on it, like our biggest country music artists go onto it and, really? And they play. I think you guys have similar things in the States. So you guys have one called the Outlaw Cruise, I believe.
I didn't know that, but that sounds majestic. Yeah. So that's
they're
cool.
Amazing. They're that's honestly cool. Amazing. And so anyway, so we're doing that in October and we've got a few other little bits and pieces here and there. And we're going to the Gold Coast this weekend for a show up there. And so we're definitely not in full-time touring cycle right now because we're on the tail end of a record. But next year is going to be our big touring year when we have the new record out. And I can't wait. I can't wait to get out there and just play some new songs and do some touring. And we've got kind of big plans for our tour next year as well around how we want to do it. I'm not allowed to talk about it yet, I've been told. So, yeah, but it's going to be a good year. So 2020 is going to be our touring year. And so that's music. And aside from that, I also occasionally, when people ask me, I occasionally do a little bit of contract work on the side for different artists. So because I'm quite experienced in the music industry here in Australia, you know, sometimes artists approach me and ask me to book tours for them or to, you know, book logistics for them or things like that. And so when I have, you know, some spare time, when do I ever have spare time?
Right, yeah.
When I feel like I can handle one more thing on my plate, then I'll throw in a little bit of contract work here and there. And I'm actually doing a little bit at the moment for an artist that I love here in Australia. And that's just, you know, just kind of something I feel passionate about is helping artists that are starting out, and I have the skills to do that. And so, so it's good to be able to do that.
Yeah, wow, that is a lot, and that's cool stuff, and that you get to be home with your babies like you want to. I mean, I think that's just awesome. So,
so I did have to, like, one thing speaking to the aspect of being a mum, yeah, and you know, the hustle and all those things. I think, like, one thing I feel passionately about though is, like, I feel like everyone talks about how, like, we can do it all, and I, like, firmly don't believe that.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
We just can't
do
it all. And it's like, I think it's, like, impossible, and I think you can do it all poorly, or you can, like, there's different seasons, and that's why, like, you know, I was talking about the record saying I'd love to have had it out earlier. I just couldn't make it happen, and I don't beat myself up about that. I don't feel bad about that in any way. I chose something different for that period, and that period was I chose to invest in my kids and my oil business, and that was what I chose for that period, and that was all I could handle. And I think that it's really empowering as a mother to make a choice that you're not going to do it all. I think what I see happening is that people try and do it all, and then they're disappointed in themselves continually when they fail in different areas. And so for me, I try and look at the whole picture and think, okay, if I take all of this on, I'm going to fail, and then I'm going to kind of hate myself for it because I'm my worst critic. And so I consciously choose what I'm just going to take out and then try not to, because otherwise I'm going to fail on something. And I don't want to fail. And so I think it's really important as a mum, because I've got like 2.5 years of experience of being a mum now, so I'm pretty much an expert.
Yeah, right. Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh. But I feel from my perspective of the last 2.5 years of being a mum, and I love being a mum. Like, I honestly thought I was going to hate it. Like, not hate it, but like just, I thought I was going to feel really stifled I'm not very maternal. And so I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to love it. And then, you know, before I knew it, I was down at my kid's daycare center doing little shows for him and his friends. So, you know, I don't know what happened. But I do think, it's important to not do it all and to pick what you want to do and prioritize that. So for me this year, what that looked like in like a practical way of how that looked for me, I had my son at home just in daycare 2 days a week, and I have my newborn baby, and I was working just every chance I got. So the 2 days he was at daycare was my big work days, and then I would try and work wherever I could when I could grab 5 minutes. And so I just felt like that wasn't working for me or for him. I felt like it was just unfair to everyone, and I felt like he was kind of not enjoying his life because I was only giving him my attention sporadically or whatever. And so what I decided to do this year, I made a decision, I just drew a line in the sand, and I said, I'm going to put him into daycare 3 days a week, but I don't work any other day of the week. So I can work at nights, but so like, you know, he goes to daycare Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and like that's today, for example, here in Australia, we're on Thursday at the moment. And I work those days, But then Mondays, Fridays and weekends, I do not work when he's awake. Like I just don't work. And so that was like a really big turning point for me. And now we do all sorts of fun things on Mondays and Fridays. You know, we go out and we like go on bushwalks and, you know, we go to the pool or, you know, we go to the zoo or whatever it may be. But once again, it's that idea of I just had to look at my life and be like, this isn't working. It's broken. Like, why am I trying to do all these things and making like everything uncomfortable for the whole family? Yeah. And so I think I basically just want to encourage any mums who are listening and just to know that it's okay. Like it's okay to not do it all. And it's also okay to constantly feel like you're behind the eight ball. And I think being comfortable with that feeling was a really important thing for me as well. It's just deciding, look, I'm always going to feel like I'm not quite there, but that's okay. Like it's okay to be uncomfortable with how you feel. It's okay to not have it all under control. Just be at peace with that feeling because yeah. that's life yeah. now.
Right. That is a really good word. I appreciate you talking through that because it can feel like, especially you're somebody who wants to like be doing all the things, you know, but to like prioritize your children, and really, I think through that. I feel like I'm a lot the same way, you know, like is this pouring into my kids the way I want to? I think that's good. That's good. I appreciate you talking about that. So, let's jump into our final two questions then, cause I know you're going to have a baby up soon and all that stuff. So so my first question for you is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
All right. Listen, I thought about this question because I did know that you were going to ask me this question. I was trying to think of something wild I could tell you. And I had one that was more like, I guess, appropriate. And then one that I was just like, oh, that's a little bit like borderline. Like I don't know how people are going to feel about that, but should I roll with that one? So I'll give you both and then, you know, they can choose how they want to view me as a person.
Okay, so. Perfect. That's perfect.
So,
and you could not care. So that's great.
When we, exactly. I mean, I don't know. I'm in Australia. So, when we were traveling around, often we would get shows or gigs at what we call in Australia shows. And so they're, I think what you guys call them is like carnivals or fairs.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what that is? Like, so they have like rides and there might be animals and, you know, there's like all of like the, you know, I guess like the carnival people with their games and, and things like that. Yeah. Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about, right?
Okay. Yes, yeah.
So we have a similar thing in Australia, but we call it like an agricultural show and it's usually tied up with, you know, cattle and you know, the farmers come in and, you know, they have cattle competitions and cooking competitions and similar idea though. You know, we have rides and we call them, but we don't call them carnival people. We call them showies. So like, cause it's called a show and so we call them showies. And it's the same concept though, you know, they're like always interesting people who live on the road and their job is, you know, these going to these shows and traveling around with them. And so we would often end up getting gigs at, you know, the show. And so we would go and do a performance or we'd be the entertainment. And so we would become quite good friends with like a lot of these showies because we'd see them all the time and we'd be going from show to show. And so we kind of like, and we were like, you know, I guess we were the same as them. We were like kind of like, you know, the showies as well. And so sometimes if we wanted to make... this isn't even the controversial story, by the way.
Okay,
this is
gotcha.
Like the normal story.
This is the normal one.
Okay, I haven't even got to the controversial one. This is the normal one. And so sometimes when us kids wanted to make some extra money, Dad would help us, like, you know, because we knew these showies, we would go and get jobs with the showies selling tickets for their rides and stuff. And so we would go in and be like the ticket ladies or help them with whatever their, you know, their carnival ride was, we would work for them for an hourly rate. And so if we were like, you know, just we were hanging out in that town for a week anyway, we'd be like, oh, and they were always like, they always loved us because we could do maths real good. And so they were like, they just thought we were great.
That's amazing.
And so amazing. We would, yes, that's, I guess that's kind of a weird sort of, people would always be like, you worked at the show? And I'm like, yeah, like we just, you know, make a bit of extra money. And so, and like,
your
we
life.
Thought it was great. You know, we might make a few hundred. Yeah. But then the more controversial one, and this isn't like a job per se, but my dad, when I was young and we were living in Broken Hill, I was probably like maybe, I don't know, somewhere between 5 and 8. I can't remember exactly when. Maybe six, say. And so my dad, one of the first jobs that I remember him having, and he probably had a million, but one of the ones I clearly remember is he's very entrepreneurial and, you know, always worked for himself. And so one of the things he tried to start was a taxidermy business. So he's a big hunter, and so he would go out shooting, and he would bring home animals, and then he'd taxiderm them in our backyard. And he had all the vats and, like, you know, the different things, and he'd, like, you know, I can't remember the words now, but, like, you know, he'd get the skins and, like, skin them, and then, you know, put the salts on them to dry them out and whatever, and he'd do all of these different, you know, animals. And look, some of them were, like, pretty wild looking, I'm not gonna lie. Like, you know, when he was learning, we're like, oh, that's one deformed looking rabbit, but okay.
That could go really wrong.
It really could, right? And so he had this little taxidermy business that, I mean, no shocker, it, like, didn't really go anywhere. Hey, he didn't make much money. There wasn't a huge market for deformed rabbits in Australia. But anyway, he tried. But I remember one day, and I remember it quite clearly, but my mum is just always, like, shakes her head when she hears this story. But one day my mum came home, and my dad was meant to be looking after us, but me and my little brother, so there was two of us. My brother was sitting on the lounge watching TV, and I was out the back with dad in his shed. So she came out and she was like, what are you guys doing? Anyway, my dad needed some help. So he'd come down to the house, and we were apparently, me and my brother, watching TV, and he said, Rachel, I need you to come and help me. And I was like, oh, all right. So I, like, went up, and I was like, oh, dad needs me. This is a big day. Like, I don't know what he's doing, but he needs me. And, like, you know, classic, like, eldest child was like, what if you need dad? Like, I just want to make you proud. So tell me what it is. And so he said, oh, I need to, I'm trying to taxiderm these two, these rats here. I want to practice on these rats. And he had these pet rats. They're alive though. And so I was like, all right. And he's like, now listen, I told you it was going to get wild, didn't I? So I just need you to help me. What I need you to just put these gloves on, and I'm going to put them in this plastic bag, and I just need you to hold them on the exhaust pipe of the car and just hold them there until I say stop. And so I was like, yeah, right. Okay, cool. And so my mum came home, and my dad was in the car, like, revving the engine, and I was holding these two rats in a bag on the exhaust pipe of the car until those. I mean, look, they're just rats, and, like, I'm not traumatized by it anyway. I think when I tell the story to people, so technically I feel like that was my first job, was helping my dad murder two rats so that he could, so we can, for the family business, right? You know, whatever you've got to do, the hustle.
You got to do what you got to do. That's right. Man, no wonder you fit in Texas well. Y'all grew up country, man. Wow.
Real country. Man. So you can decide whether or not you want to include that story in the podcast or not, all right? I'll leave that one up to you.
It's getting included. I'm just going to tell you right now, because that is incredible. My gosh.
Amazing. I love it.
Wow. That's good. Goodness. I want to hang out with your dad.
You would love him. Like I said, everyone loves him. Everyone's like, your dad's cooler than you. I'm like, I know, he is. That's awesome.
I want to be that dad someday.
I'm sure you will be.
Okay, so finally, so what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring the kingdom of God more into their work?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a hard one, I think, because it's become something general for everyone. And this is going to sound maybe a little odd and a little, like, kind of, like, jokey, but it's like, I'm not being jokey, but I kind of am. But I think the best advice I have for people is, like, just don't be weird. And so I think a lot of people make talking to people about God or about salvation or heaven or anything, they seem to make it, I don't know, just, like, uncomfortable and weird. And I think that shows. And so, you know, the best example I can give is when you hear people talk about a product that they really love, and you hear people talk about, I don't know, like, their Mac computers and or their Apple products, and they go on and on and on about them, you know, and they will do anything to get the new product, and they just are happy to rave about this product, and they don't feel, you know, uncomfortable talking to people about a computer. And yet when they talk about something like Jesus, which technically, like, is more life-changing than a Mac computer, right? Like, it changes everything. It changes how you live. It changes where you're going. It changes everything. And suddenly they become very uncomfortable when they talk about it. And it shows, you know. I think whenever I'm very comfortable in my Christianity, and I don't really shy away from it because I just feel like it's such an awesome thing. You know, why would I not want to talk to people about that? But at the same time, like, there's a time and a place. There is a way to go about it. And that, I think this comes down to like just looking at the person in front of you and meeting them where they're at. Talking, you know, meeting someone and then deciding that you're going to talk to them about hell. I mean, wow, guys, like, chill out. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's probably not the best, like, entry into talking to them about, you know, the goodness of God or whatever. And so I think, you know, think about how you would talk about anything else that you love, any other thing in the world that God created that you love. And that's how we should be talking about Jesus. And at the same time, I just think that if you feel uncomfortable talking to people about God, and if you feel like, you know, you're worried about what people think, or if, you know, you're concerned like, oh, I don't want them to judge me or whatever it may be, that might mean that you need to do some more work in your heart. And like, I don't mean that in a judgmental way at all. We've all been there, you know, I've had to, you know, look at my own heart before. But I think that if you feel uncomfortable talking to someone about God because you're worried about what they'll think, then maybe you need to investigate whether your belief in God and his goodness and what he's done for you and how his opinion of you matters more than the world's opinion. Maybe you need to do some more work in that area so that you feel properly secure in love of Jesus. Because I think that nothing I can say or that you can say is going to change that for anyone. The only thing that can change it is that they truly believe the word of God, and they truly believe it when Jesus says that, you know, his grace is sufficient, you know, that he is the way, all those things. If you truly believe that, I think that just transforms how you feel when you share the good news with people. So, yeah.
That is good. Good job. That ministered to me in a lot of ways. So thanks. Thanks for that.
Oh, no problem.
Well, it is... Yeah, it's awesome. It has been so good to get to talk to you.
So good.
I really have enjoyed this. So, yeah. Well, get to some work done before that baby wakes up.
Thank you. I will. And hey, thank you so for having me. I love what you guys are doing. I love what you're doing on this podcast. And I think it's just such a cool thing. And I think that it's a great thing that there's a place where Christianity and Jesus and the hustle all intersect. And I think that's something that we don't celebrate as much as we should in Christian circles, but I think it's a really important thing. And I love that there's a place for people to come and hear about other people who are the same as them. And so I just love the work that you're doing, and I'm so grateful that you reached out and appreciate you having me on the show. So thank you.
Oh, that means a lot. I definitely appreciate that. All right. Well, and when you come to tour and you hit up like Chicago, you know, let me know. I'm there.
Oh, okay, done. So. I'll let you know. We'll come and do it at your house.
Okay, perfect. It's open. All right, Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Rachel. I really enjoyed talking to her. I even forgot between talking to her and cutting this episode just how insightful she is, just how much fun we had chatting about all the things. Make sure and go check out her music. Even if you're not a huge country music fan, I think you're going to enjoy what's going on with her. And check out her Instagram, because when her new music comes out, you want to know about it. I'm just going to tell you that right now. So make sure you're following her on Instagram. If you like this episode, I would just ask you to go ahead and give it a share. That helps get the word out about Theology of Hustle. I think more people need to be learning about the hustle. You know what I mean? So go out there, share it for me, rate and review, do all the things. Thank you for your support. You're awesome. Until next time, get out there and hustle.